It's 9:06.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Kids' lives have become very structured, especially if they play sports. Long gone are the days of kids just hitting or kicking a ball on the playground or in the street. Now they're all parts of teams, and in recent years, the intersection of kids and sports has changed in another way. 20 years ago, children might have played on a football team in the fall, a basketball team in the winter, and then followed it up with baseball or softball in the spring. But nowadays, children are prodded into finding a sport they are especially good at and devoting their time to that sport exclusively. With all the competition, it makes it easier to excel over time, to get an athletic scholarship to college, maybe even make it to the majors. Sounds like it makes sense, but it isn't well-rounded. Worse, some experts now say that this hyper-specialization of youth sports is actually damaging a child's athletic prowess. Could this really be true? Well, we're going to explore that this hour with Dr. Neera Jahanti, Medical Director of Primary Care Sports Medicine at Loyola University Medical Center in Chicago, and the author of a study on several studies on hyperspecialization in youth sports, and he joins us by phone. Thank you for being with us this morning, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
And here in our Spirit Square studio is Dr. Kevin Burrows, Director of Sports Medicine and Injury Care for Carolina's healthcare system. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
David Darwin knows about this because he was injured. He is a pitching instructor and owner of Core Athletics in Concord and a former professional baseball player who had an injury with what, your pitching arm?
I hurt my back.
You hurt your back?
Yes.
And now helps kids now avoid these injuries or teach them proper form.
Correct. Just trying to find the right mechanics physically,
okay,
so that they don't get hurt
all
later
right
on.
And Cliff Boyd is here. He's the president of Matthews Athletic Recreation Association, which deals with all kinds of sports activities for young people. Thank you for being here, too.
Thanks for having me.
Hyper-specialization in child athletics. Essentially, it's a move to make children, I guess what, more like adult athletes. Why? What's pushing kids toward this? What is this phenomenon all about? And I'm not sure who to ask this question of. Dr. Jahanti, let's start with you, and then we'll go around the table here.
Sure, and I think all of us could weigh in on this one. I think this has probably evolved over the last 15 or 20 years, and some of it is looking at the carrots involved and the rewards involved of trying to train young athletes, and that might be a college scholarship or the emphasis we've placed on the success of sports in general, you know, the growth of ESPN and everything like that. So I think I'm actually going to be giving an upcoming talk called Keeping Up with the Joneses. We've felt as a society, if you're not doing more than your neighbors, kids, or other folks, you have to keep upping the ante, and it just perpetuates itself. And I think it's kind of led to some maybe other problems that haven't been studied until fairly recently.
David and Cliff, you deal with kids every day who are involved in athletics. What do you think is driving this this push toward making a kid focus on one sport to the exclusion of all others?
Well, I think the kids, college scholarships, parents have a very, they just don't understand how the college scholarships work. So they think that they're going to get a full scholarship like in football or basketball, and they push that way. I think time, too. Parents don't have time. We're all working. We're running around. So baseball or soccer or whatever sport is structured, they can fit that into their schedule, and they can go. And the kids just kind of stay with that rhythm mm-hmm. throughout the year. And I think that's kind of just the way our culture has become driven to just time management has allowed these kids to do one sport.
Cliff?
Well, a couple of things. I think as I thought about this topic, one of the things that jumped out at me is I see it as kind of two separate issues. You have the pressure to play and practice sports a lot. Okay, there's a pressure out there that kids need to be playing athletics year round. Practicing, drilling, doing athletic training. That's one issue. It's almost a hyper situation in and of itself. It's extreme sports playing year round, and sort of second to that is this issue of specializing playing one particular sport.
Yeah.
So I kind of see it as two separate issues. But I agree. There's a lot of societal pressure. The kids see their friends playing year round. They think they're getting a leg up on them. The parents see that. That's a big aspect of it. But I think there's also a big driver out there business-wise. There's a lot of, you know, companies that are set up to sell their services to the kids, and some are doing it the right way, and some maybe are not.
I want to come back to that. But whatever happened to the days when kids just went out in the front yard or on the street or in the backyard or some playground somewhere and just did a pickup game with buddies? What happened to that?
That's exactly as you said. It goes by the wayside. They really feel like they needed to focus on that. And just the time demands, like Dave was saying, I mean, if you've got the schedule that's demanding you to be at certain place, certain times, the free time, as you will, to be able to be allowed to play.
But the time, I've watched my nephew go through this. So this time demand has to do with parents putting kids in leagues or kids wanting to be in leagues. I know that my nephew plays on three different basketball leagues every Saturday. Every Saturday, it's like he gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning. At 8 o'clock, he's playing one game. At 11 o'clock, he's playing another. At 3 o'clock, he's in another one. That's crazy.
Is that? I guess my question there is that what he wanted to do, or is that
– Well, I think it is.
An outside force.
I think it is what he wants to do, but he does it every weekend. And he's not going to be a basketball player, but if you do one sport exclusively all day Saturday and then during the week, are you setting yourself up for repetitive injury?
Well,
even if you're doing it right.
I think even with the studies that Dr. Janathan and his colleagues have seen is that that's a true statement,
yeah.
And we're seeing it more and more. And as this happens more and more, I think that the studies will follow into suit, that we will see those. I know clinically in the practice, I have certainly seen that happen.
Dr. Jayanti, why did you embark on several studies focusing on this hyper-specialization in sports? What was it about this that made you want to look at this in depth?
Well, to be honest, we inadvertently ran into this this issue because we were studying about 500 tennis players. I do a lot of research in young tennis players, and and we happened to evaluate the percentage of the tennis players who were only playing tennis and whether or not they had reported an injury. And we found a fair association between them statistically, saying, hey, look, this looks like this is a problem in tennis. Then it happened to be at the time where Andre Agassi wrote his book, Open, if you might remember, about how much he hated tennis and everything because he only played tennis. And we got quite a bit of media that, and everyone extrapolated to every other sport, and I kept saying, well, we don't really have data to show that. So I said, I really better start doing some studies on all the sports, otherwise this is going to, you know, spread like wildfire. So then we started looking at our clinical population of kids who were coming to a clinic who were injured in sports medicine clinics and compare them to kids who were athletes coming for sports physicals at two institutions. So we ended up getting about 1,200 kids. And like Dr. Burrow said, we found a pretty strong association between the risks of playing exclusively one sport and even a high degree of specialization and the risk of not only just regular injury but more serious overuse injuries. And that's even accounting for the total number of hours per week and also their age. So we feel pretty confident about that.
Does the danger involved in this specialization, whether it's kid-driven or parent-driven or coach-driven, because the coach may say, hey, this guy is great. You gotta really buckle down. You have no time for baseball. You got to play football. Is it something that happens later in a child's life, or does it happen because they start too young?
So I think that's what Dr. Burrows alluded to. I think we're going to have to keep doing studies because, you know, again, we have one initial study that suggests that, and whether the influencer is you know, the age itself or the intensity is still in doing stuff later on is still to be determined. I suspect there's a little bit of both. I will say, going back to a couple of the comments you mentioned about the free play issue, we actually really are interested in this issue, and in fact, there's a really interesting secondary study we're getting out of our data is that we looked at kids who had less resources. In other words, the kids who were on public aid insurance and didn't have socioeconomic backgrounds with as much resources, they actually played more hours per week total. They participated more physical activity per week than the kids in organized sport, but yet had less serious overuse injuries and specialized much, much less. And so we coined this training ratio, sports training ratio, of how much organized sports you do compared to how much free play. And so if you exceed that by 2-1, you are more likely also to get serious overuse injuries. And these kids in socioeconomic backgrounds that are not as good were almost always lower than 2-1. And it's kind of encouraging to see that kind of ratio. And like you said, I think that's really changed. I mean, as a group, we were almost 2-1 for organized sports, which is probably reversed about 20 years ago. And if you take sports like tennis, they're about 4.5 times to one.
Now,
so
if the injury level is greater in these organized activities and it's less in free style sports, playground games, the pickup games, that they're actually devoting more playing time to, what does that say? Does that say that in the organized games that they're drilling too much, that they're not getting proper training in these organized games? What does that say? Why is that the case? And let me start with Cliff here David. Sorry.
Well, I think a lot of it is the culture. We are parents. When I grew up, we were gone 4, 5, 6 hours playing in the woods. We played baseball. We threw rocks. We did all these things that developed muscle structure. Kids are the Xbox generation, are not developing a core structure from the lats down through the quads. They don't ride their bikes for hours on end. And so you have a structure in place at rec leagues that I run or MARA or wherever across the country or travel teams that provide that opportunity for moms feeling safe to put their child in a fenced-in area to play a game.
Right.
And I think a lot of the injuries are coming from fatigue playing. So, you know, you play basketball all day Saturday. Well, the first shot you make is going to be the best shot probably because in that last game they're fatigued. And especially from a pitching standpoint, a kid has great mechanics, can go and throw. But if he's playing outfield in the last game on Sunday, it's a fifth game, he's just tired.
Yeah.
And if we were doing that growing up, well, we quit throwing rocks and we went bike riding or we went and played in the woods or we built a fort or, you know, we did things that developed muscles.
And something I read yesterday, I know nothing about this topic, but something I read yesterday, and I'll get your opinion on this. Someone said that not only are we making kids play in too structured a manner, more like adults, but they're playing on adult size playing fields or courts or whatever. And the field of play is too big for their bodies, and they become exhausted over time and more prone to injury. Is that true?
If you look at there's a few things that have been done. One, if you look at even the World Cup down in Brazil, the introduction for them for soccer is not on regulation size soccer fields. It is a scaled down version that is a smaller ball and a smaller field, and it's really more about developing that hand or foot coordination that's in there.
They touch the ball more often.
They touch the ball way more often during the course of that. Also, if you look at, there was one that they did with ice hockey, and they put the parents onto a rink that was proportionately the same size that if you took a young kid and put them on a regular ice rink. And they were so spread out that even during that course, you can't have a regular hockey game. You're too spread out. There's not enough passing. It ended up being very sparsely done. And then you've got a lot bigger distances to run and everything else. So the size of the field, I think, might be. But when we start looking, if you look at these sports, there are certain things in each one of the sports that start to stand out.
Like?
In gymnastics, you would see wrist and back because that's a lot of the impact aspects of it. For baseball, you've got shoulders and elbows. For soccer or basketball and those extended things, those are where we start seeing some of the growth plate or some of the apophysis-type injuries, which is a growth center where tendons attach. And those really come out of that overuse that happens. So lower extremity injuries would be in soccer and basketball and things like that.
So if you're devoting a lot of time to one sport, you're liable to hurt the things that are being used more often or used more often incorrectly in that sport, whereas if you were to spread your wealth, play baseball, football, a bunch of different things, you are lessening the amount of impact because you're not using those – you're using different areas of your body.
Exactly. Like so what David was saying there earlier, we used to as we were growing up, if you got tired of baseball or basketball, you went and played football.
Let me stop there. We'll come back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Vein Center of Charlotte, now offering the Smart Skin CO2 laser for laser facial resurfacing. More information at 704-341-1122 or veincenterofcharlotte.com. This state has incredible diversity, at least geographically speaking, from the mountains to the beach and the plains and everything in between, big cities, small towns, farms. One thing common to it all, however, is water. And we have a huge network of streams and rivers and lakes that we use for drinking and recreational purposes and, in some places, power generation. But it's also, water is also a focal point for politics. So we're going to meet three river keepers from various parts of the state tomorrow to talk about the challenge of keeping our waterways healthy. And we'll get started tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, large blooms of poisonous algae in Lake Erie recently forced a tap water ban in Toledo, Ohio. Scientists say it's a widespread problem across the country. What's behind the increase in the harmful algae and debate over tougher regulation?
That's the Diane Rehm Show coming up next from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about hyper-specialization in youth sports, where a child is encouraged to, forced to, wants to play one sport to the exclusion of all others, with Dr. Nero Jayanthi, Medical Director of Primary Care Sports Medicine at Loyola University Medical Center in Chicago and the author of several studies on this topic. Dr. Kevin Burrows is with us from Carolina's healthcare system. He's the Director of Sports Medicine and Injury Care there. David Darwin is a pitching instructor and owner of Core Athletics in Concord, who himself suffered an injury as a professional player and now helps kids avoid that or recuperate from injury. Cliff Boyd is president of Matthews Athletic and Recreation Association. A lot of kids do this because their parents want them to specialize, because they want them to get that college scholarship, or they think that will help them get that college skip. A lot of kids do this because they have dreams of playing in the pros. A lot of people do this because they think that if they don't, in this competitive atmosphere where other kids are, they will be left behind. And that feeling begins at the middle school level. If you don't make the middle school team, you're not going to make the high school team. Therefore, you're not going to make the college team. So at the age of 9 or 10, you have to begin to specialize. Is that not true?
I would argue yes.
So what's a mother to do, to quote an old television commercial?
Well, I think the study that we read here with the doctor, that I agree that you get a bigger – You gain a greater ability the longer you play multiple sports. And I'm a league proponent versus the tournament proponent.
You get greater ability the longer you play
multiple sports. Because you're developing a wider range of muscle structure. Mm-hmm. And for cultural reasons, we've gotten away from that, which we can talk later about. But I think that but we do see baseball players that have played the rec leagues along the way. Mm-hmm. They do not make their middle school team because the speed of the game has gotten faster than they can handle.
Right.
So I see kids get hit in the chest with a baseball thrown from shortstop, and they just don't have the quickness of the hand-glove trajectory, you know, to figure out how to make that catch.
You run an organization, Cliff, that deals with a lot of teams. I'm sure you field a lot of teams in various different sports, and coaches want winners. Parents want winners. Parents blame the coach if their kid doesn't get enough playing time. But the coach doesn't want to put a kid in who can't play because he wants to have a winning record on his team. This is a vicious thing, a vicious cycle.
It is a vicious cycle. And to that point, you know, one of the good things about recreational sports is you know, it's got the word recreational in it, which implies there's a certain degree of fun. Right. That's easy to forget. So – you know, MARA, and I think a lot of other recreation organizations.
And MARA is the Matthews
Athletic and Rec Association. And a lot of other associations like us put a lot of emphasis on, you know, fair play, making sure kids are playing different positions, making sure they're getting, you know, trained properly to the best of the volunteer coaches' abilities, and making sure we're not putting them in a situation where they're going to get injured.
Yeah.
For example, to David's point, you know, putting them in a position where they could get hurt.
Dr. Jayanthi, we've talked a little bit about the injuries that can happen if you hyper-specialize in a sport, but is there any scientific evidence to indicate that hyper-specializing in a sport at a young age results in better skills if you don't get injured?
Well, thank you for asking that question. And, you know, what's interesting is we should be presenting this argument of specialization as a predictor for success or lack of success, even more than the injury thing. And we did a comprehensive review of every sport we could find evidence on to see when people were specializing and what their success was. And essentially every sport except for the early entry sports of basically like gymnastics, people specialize in middle or later adolescence. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are some late entry sports as well, too, for success. A recent, there's like set of unpublished abstracts from UCLA, UT Austin, and of course our own Loyola Ramblers, showing that college athletes actually did not specialize early and played multiple sports, even into high school, a fair amount of time. And UCLA study by John DeFiore's group suggested that actually just having a family, at least someone in the family who played D1 athletics or professional athletics, was a bigger predictor. David Epstein wrote the book The Sports Gene and really suggests that each person has a really limited range that they can develop their skills. And beyond that, you can only train so much. So some people are just destined to be a good athlete, and you can train 3 times as much as them, but you may never actually catch up with them. That's hard for a parent to hear.
Is there any scientific evidence that injuries that result from hyperspecialization are more severe with longer-lasting repercussions than injuries suffered by an athlete who plays in multiple sports?
So we also looked at that, and particularly those that are what we would consider serious overuse injuries, and probably the best example of that for me is stress fractures in the low back. And we did find that at a reasonably alarming rate where kids who did specialize and had higher degrees of specialization, as we had defined it, were much more likely to have serious overuse injuries as well, too. And those are things that can kind of haunt you much beyond just your young years of play. So, yes, we have some concerns about that as well.
And Dr. Burroughs, what are you seeing with patients who present various injuries to you in terms of whether they're a hyper-specialized athlete or whether they are a generalist?
You know, as we talk about this, let's not, not forget, though, that we're not going to take all injuries out of sport. I mean, that's one of the things. So there are going to be acute injuries that happen, just because of the angle of the forces and everything that happens with it. But whenever we start looking, we've got the acute injuries, but then we've got the overuse injuries. And I think that a lot we see there is overuse injuries is a great deal of the times that we'll see this.
Are those less repairable?
No, actually, the nice thing is that in the overuse, a lot of times it is a matter of just taking them out of that stressful environment or that stress to the particular joint. So let's say with the elbow, since we're talking about baseball, if there is a separation at the apophysis, which is a growth center where the tendon attaches, and if that separates, as long as it's not by too much, all of those heal conservatively. No surgery. It's just a matter of not throwing. Now, whenever somebody comes in and we're talking about that, you know, as long as it's not painful, we can still have that kid be able to bat and be a pinch runner or pinch hitter in their league. So they can still be a part of the team, get the collegiality and things of that. But we just need to take the stress off of the injured joint.
So when a kid comes to you, David, who's had one of these repetitive injuries, is there a workaround? Can you help them with their would correcting form or doing it in a different way be helpful? How do you help them, I guess?
We ask them two questions. One is, how'd you get hurt? And sometimes it's pitchers throwing twice in one day, or they'll play a two-game tournament and they'll pitch on 3 games. Now, I threw 2 innings in each game. It was 6 innings. But the repetitiveness of those lactic acid in the arm, it breaks down. They're fatigued. Or there's a muscle or a structural breakdown of the mechanics. And so when, we'll throw, we'll video, we'll do some different drills with them to see where that breakdown is. And then we help them work back through the mechanics. And it is a science to why our body produces energy.
Also, if you're a professional athlete, if you're playing Major League Baseball or any of the Major League sports, you have access to great trainers and people who do reparative therapies on you, masseuses and things like that, to get the lactic acid out of your muscles. The kids in these child leagues have access?
Well, I would say that you have a professional coach with you every day.
Yeah.
Watching your mechanics and protecting you from coming out of those mechanics. And, you know, we work hard with parents to watch them, their kids, make sure they don't do this, make sure they do these things, because that's a huge advantage for the pro guys.
Dr. Jayanthi, your study showed that sport diversification not only had a protective effect, but that kids who played multiple sports developed motor and anticipatory skills that allowed them to master their favorite sport more quickly. Talk about that.
Well, I can't claim credit for developing that study. We actually did a review of a study in one of our manuscripts. But I'll take any extra credit you want to give me. You know, there was a it was actually a sociologist who developed who had done some of the earlier studies suggesting what we call a positive transfer of skills. And simply put, that means when you do other things, let's say you're a tennis player, but then you play soccer and basketball, you develop. And I think Cliff and David here outlined it well. You develop other motor skills that will help you in your primary sport. And when you are a young person, you need to develop a lot of other skills. And I think we specialize so much, we don't develop that. And then that repetitive overuse injury risk is there. But also the physical, what we call physical literacy, is lacking in some of these specialized athletes.
Does this get back to the point you were making a few minutes ago, David, about speed? If a kid plays video games for most of his life, but then also likes to play baseball, if he's going to get up off the couch, he's going to play baseball. But he doesn't have the speed to react. Would that speed come from playing other sports?
Oh, sure. I mean, the more they do, obviously, the more the brain connects with the body reacts faster, the better they're going to have long term. But when they're just playing video games and they go play, you know, at a league or on a tournament, practice once a week and then play games, it just doesn't come as fast.
That neuromuscular education that you get from all these different ways, it's not, you know, it's not about just that. That's where the development, as it goes through the adolescence, and as we found out, that's where they can really hone in those skills. But just the general neuromuscular development of these young kids, where's the body in position with the rest of everything, and how do you make motions happen? And when we look at these, because this is another question that comes up, and I was thinking whenever Dave was talking about, well, why is it or how is it you get injured, and we look at structure and we look at muscle function in particular. You know, the question all the time is about lifting weights and doing things. There's a difference between strength training and weight training. You know, I mean, you can develop, even with TheraBand or other kind of exercise bands, the strength and the neuromuscular function that is very helpful in all these sports. It doesn't mean you have to get in and bench press 200 pounds. As a matter of fact, for a lot of athletes, that motion could be harmful because of the structure, the way it sets up. We look a lot at scapular position. So if the scapula, the shoulder blade itself is not in the right position, you're a setup right there for injury. And that's one that Dave and I were talking about, is that the position or the structure of that shoulder to start with, as it developmentally comes on, that could be a risk factor for that person going on to develop a throwing injury.
Is this kind of thing talked about among parents, among coaches, at places like about the Matthews Athletic Association that you run? Is this a topic of conversation?
It is. I hear a lot about parents' perspectives, coaches' perspectives. You know, we do talk about, and there are concerns about the injury aspects, and you know, in general, you know, we don't see a lot of injuries. I see them, but are they related to just playing sports, or are they related to overuse? I don't know. But you know, something we actually spend a lot more time talking about is the mental aspect of it, the burnout that can come from playing a single sport exclusively, and you know, burning kids out early. And then they don't get the benefit of all the good life lessons that they get by playing a sport on through, whether they play competitively or not, learning to, you know, to play sports or be athletic or be healthy for the rest of their lives.
And where is that perspective coming from? Is it coming from parents who are seeing it in their children? Is it coming from children who are expressing low interest even though they used to excel at the sport? Is it coming from coaches who are watching it? Where is that coming from?
It's all the above. I think there's, you know, certainly there's a lot of anxiety amongst parents about over-specializing. You know, they're a lot of times I think they find themselves in that situation. They just kind of woke up one day and it's like, wow, I'm specializing. And they worry that they're going to burn out their kid. And then you do see that play out in reality. You see kids giving it up for no other reason other than they lost interest because it was too much.
But is it possible to really excel at a sport if you don't specialize, if you don't spend an enormous amount of time playing, drilling, practicing, whatever you want to call it, at that sport?
One interesting example I heard, you know, it was funny when I came on, told people I was coming on the show, everybody wanted to tell me their own personal stories. But one story I heard kind of backs up what Dr. Gianti was saying is a friend of mine whose son was highly recruited as a baseball player going into college. And he made a point to tell me that he had probably five or six coaches ask him did your son play multiple sports, or did he specialize in just baseball? Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that question was, these coaches' perspective was that, all things being equal, if you have 10 kids and relatively similar skill set level, they would prefer to have the player who played multiple sport to hand over that scholarship to, because the perception is that's a person that's probably a better rounded athlete and somebody who maybe hasn't reached their ceiling of potential because they spent 365 days a year drilling one particular sport.
This is something that came up in a conversation we had with getting kids ready to go to college and making your college applications, was that there was a theory for a long period of time that a child in high school had to specialize, really concentrate in one area, join one club and be the premier knockout person in that club. And suddenly, colleges now want more well-rounded people. How do you know what's coming next? I mean, we keep changing the rules. It's not just athletics, it's everything. Is this an uphill battle from your point of view, Dr. Jayanthi, as you read these studies and conduct these studies and let people know about what you've discovered in these studies? Do people resist making the change towards specialization?
Well, I think this is a national venture. We're involved, been involved with this organization, Aspen Institute, which has a sport and society division, and the whole mission is called Project Play, which is trying to take the leadership in the medical societies and then the organizations through, youth baseball and hockey and USTA and every sport, and bring them together in one room and try to help solve this dilemma. So I think what we're trying to do is start by reversing the trend. It's sort of like weight loss. You can't have weight loss until you stop gaining weight. So if we can stop this trend to start with, and then the bigger issue for me and probably for this organizational goal is that how many kids get left out and don't even get involved in physical activity, because like you guys said, can't even make their middle school team, and they don't want to do 12 to 14 hours a week or whatever sport. They just want to play for fun, but there's no environment for it. Sounds like you have a recreational organization that might provide an environment, but there's far fewer though. So yes, our ultimate goal should be to have kids be physically active, and we are obviously losing that battle.
But practice makes perfect. And kids, we know that kids who don't do well academically in school don't like to go to school because they feel like a failure. And if kids don't do well on the ball field, they don't want to play ball because they feel like a failure. And the only way you're going to get better at it is by practicing. So it's kind of a dilemma here. How do you find a happy medium?
Well, I think the one thing is that you got to find the sport that's right for you. They mentioned the book about the sports gene. I think that there are certain people who are good baseball players. Can you make everybody a good baseball player? I don't know. That'd be a David kind of question, maybe. I think you can make people be able to play baseball, but I don't know that you're going to make them a baseball player.
But you look at Michael Jordan, who diversified from basketball to golf, and you saw what happened.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because if you look at this and we talk about hyper-specialization, what about Tiger? He was on with Bob Hope at the age of two showing how he could hit a golf ball. Now, as we say this, we could think about Tiger. Who else are we thinking about? So how many other people are there like that?
We have to take a break. Dr. Nero Jayanthi with the Loyola University Medical Center has to leave us now because he has other things to do. But I want to thank you for your time this hour. We will continue our conversation about hyper-specialization in sports with our guests in the studio. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Horak Tally, helping individuals and businesses find sharp solutions to their legal needs for more than 80 years. Details at horaktally.com. Large blooms of poisonous algae in Lake Erie recently forced a tap water ban in Toledo, Ohio, and scientists say it's a widespread problem across the country. So coming up at 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, Diane Rehm and her guests discuss what's behind the increase in harmful algae and debate over tougher regulations. That's coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. We're going to continue our conversation about hyper-specialization in sports, and if you'd like to jump on board, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks will get you to us, as will Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
I'm Marco Werman. When it comes to news, summertime is not the slow season.
What was shocking to us and to the people of Gaza who walked back.
People think that Ebola is a disease that quickly burns out and is incredibly
devastating. The evidence is scattered throughout these fields, and we would need a whole army of investigators.
Big stories and small surprises, too. That's The World.
The World, coming up at 3 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about hyper-specialization in sports. More and more kids today are devoting all of their time to one sport, and that's leading to more injuries and not necessarily to the dreams being achieved at the college or even pro levels. With Dr. Kevin Burrows, Director of Sports Medicine and Injury Care at Carolina's Healthcare System, David Darwin, a pitching instructor and owner of Core Athletics in Concord, a former professional player, and Cliff Boyd, president of the Matthews Athletic and Recreation Association. Here in Charlotte, you cannot play sports in the schools until the seventh grade, so they're not adding to this problem, it seems to me. The hyper-specialization is really happening outside of the schools. And do you recommend diversification at younger ages to kids who want to play in your leagues?
Absolutely. For all the reasons we've talked about here, we have to go back to it's recreational sports at that age. It's supposed to be fun. And the more kids, the more sports they can expose themselves to, that's fun. But then they also learn, what games they like to play.
And when a child wants to play exclusively one sport over another, is it because the child wants to play one sport over another or because his parents want him to play one or her to play one sport over another in most cases? I'm asking you to generalize here.
I think it's a combination of all the above. You mentioned the word, vicious cycle earlier. It can be because, kids see other kids doing it. Mm-hmm. The more kids that do it, then means there's more societal pressure for more kids to do it. So it's parents feeling the pressure, it's kids feeling the pressure. It's coaches feeling that pressure.
So at some point, if it's good for a young kid, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, to be playing all these different sports so that they develop various different muscles in their body and one sport informs the other because of this body-mind connection on how to move quickly, etc. At what point do you think it's okay to begin to specialize in one sport over another?
Well, the studies say probably around 14, 15 years old.
Why is that the magic age?
I think a lot of it is they finish through their growing years, growth plates close up, and from the doctor's side, we see that a lot, is you see less of the bone issues. But then they also have the muscle structure to repeat their mechanics. Whatever sport it is, they can repeat, at which point they can refine it. And when they refine their skills, then they can be sharper, faster, quicker, and then they can exponentially grow. And I argue with parents all the time that it's fun watching your 8, 9, 10-year-old play baseball and win gold medals. But when they're 15, 16, 17, and they're really playing baseball at a high level, it's way more fun. Because it's a conversation, and you really get into the game. And it doesn't have to be baseball. We do multiple sports stuff too, but, and baseball is my passion. But, you really have a lot more fun with your child, and you watch them play, and it's at the higher ages.
You played professionally, so let me ask you, as a child, and baseball is your passion,
right?
As a child, did you play other sports?
Yes.
All
the way through high school.
Or was a lot, or was baseball the primary focus?
No, well, 25 years ago, when I was coming through high school, I went to Westmeck High School, and so everything played. I ran cross country, I wrestled, and then I played baseball in the spring and summer. And fall baseball was really just starting to come on the scene, mm-hmm, in the early 90s. So you didn't have the opportunities either to play year-round.
David mentioned the age 14, and I've read that yesterday, that 14 kept cropping up a lot in what I was reading about the age where it's okay to start to specialize. And, in fact, maybe you should, because that will get you the college scholarship. If you agree with 14, why? Why is that the magic age, Doctor?
Well, I think that's exactly, David mentioned structurally speaking, and if you look back the study that Dr. Gianti did previously, and then what he was referencing was the studies out of UCLA with Dr. DiFiore, is that that's where we know that from retrospect. We know that these are the college athletes, and we asked them when did they start, and that's what the magic age was. It seemed to be that the ones that started at the 12-year-old age weren't the college athletes, whereas the ones that were 14. And, you know, we could probably get a little bit of variation, but no matter, even if you look at the European studies in soccer and in tennis, they all fell out about the same age. Mm-hmm. So at that point, during that middle to later adolescence is when a lot of the growth plate, because the physis is a cartilage structure. And it's much softer or less, more prone to injury than whenever they're more solid and have turned completely to bone. And so that age group is probably around that time when they are less likely to be injured from doing those more repetitive type things where they can refine the game. I think that was well said, is that, you know, when they get to that point, you can get to a refinement area, and you can keep doing that, and your body can stand up to that stress. And I think that that age group is probably about the time when that starts to happen.
I want to go back to something, Cliff, you said several segments ago about the commercial organizations that are involved in youth athletics, and that I read yesterday that much of the trend is being driven by organizations like these. It seems to me that the fact that there are commercial organizations that will help your child develop into the superstar that you have dreams of him or her becoming, the fact that they exist is part of the problem, isn't it?
It is. It's a challenge for any recreational organization. These outside entities that are, you know, they're for-profit businesses, most of them. And some are doing it the right way, some are not. But they have a very compelling message that they're advertising with, which is, you know, come train with the pros or come train with an ex-pro. Our facilities are second to none. Come and, you know, take your kids to the next level. And it's a very compelling message. It puts a lot of pressure on families.
Which makes me pivot to David Darwin, who is a former professional who is now running.
But he's one of the good ones.
Okay. Core Athletics in Concord.
We'll ever meet outside here in a little bit.
Obviously, your marketing is different. What you do is help kids be successful through the proper form.
Well, why do we play sports? We play sports to teach ourselves life lessons. So you kind of get back to the community and the concepts that we grew up with. You know, I want my kids to play music so they understand, have an appreciation for music. Mm-hmm. I want my kids to be able to read and write and do math and do things that are going to help them develop and blossom. And sports is a big part of that because it's a physicalness about our bodies.
Right.
And we need that in our society today. It just, as I finished playing ball and I kind of went through the rehab of my body, I was just teaching some kids on the side, just having fun with them. And 10 years later, I'm still doing it because I've impacted those kids to help them reach their goals. And it helps them to understand the mechanics of it so that they can do more. And the business has grown out of this for two reasons. One, because as a 12-year-old, my dad doesn't know anything. And I need to find somebody else to help me. And then number two is they don't have the muscle structure to hear dad tell them to do it correctly and then work through it. Because a lot of our families now, dads didn't play a lot of baseball. And you remember the old Volkswagen commercial. Dr. Burroughs and I were laughing about this, of the guy throwing wrong-footed, wrong arm, and it just couldn't throw it straight. And we laugh at that, but, you know, I don't see that kind of case. But I do see cases of that way where son throws like dad or daughter throws like mom and dad. And so because we can't teach as a society some of these skills, a business like mine and the whole has kind of grown out of that. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a separation between what we do and what some of the travel organizations have kind of come out of this is there was a need for a higher competitiveness of athletics, baseball, basketball, volleyball, soccer. And so the society has changed how we have competed, and the for-profit businesses, and there's a lot of money in this, and the tournaments especially, that have just come out of that need for the competitiveness because the rec leagues, and I see this because we run a rec league as well, that the athletic ability is just not there compared to the better athlete playing the sport.
But the thing about all of this is that I think in every endeavor in the world, at least in this country, if you look at Broadway performers today versus in the 1970s, if you look at professional baseball players today versus the 1970s, or name a sport, name an endeavor, everybody's better. Therefore, the competition has got to be exponentially tougher. So in the face of all of that, how do you survive it? I mean, what's the alternative? And we've been talking about hyper-specialization in traditional sports like football, baseball, basketball. But hyper-specialization is not something, and that's relatively new, but it's not new in sports like gymnastics or ice skating, where kids start at 5 and 6 and 7, and they devote their lives to that if they want to be at the Olympic level. They have to. They have to. Always had to. And now they particularly have to. Are we seeing those kinds of injuries in those sports? And have we traditionally seen them?
Absolutely. It's been there all along. It's just a, you know, some of the times it's just considered a product or a byproduct of what happens during these sports. And then it's just kind of an accepted thing.
So if it's accepted in those sports, why is it wrong?
Well, that's a philosophical as well as a medical kind of an issue.
Because you're not going to be Nancy Kerrigan or Brian Boitano if you don't start at 5 and if you quit every time you hurt yourself.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak to it directly from any kind of study or background aspect, but as we look at other sports like Dr. Gianti was talking about with tennis and other ones as well, I think that there is a degree that there's some of these do. And again, injuries are going to happen. We're not saying that we're going to prevent every single one of them. And I think an injury that I wanted to really go back if we could, because sure. When we were talking about earlier that Cliff had said that was overtraining. That is an injury in itself, really, and it's one. I mean, there are physical things that come out of overtraining, and we focused here on arms and legs and shoulders and things. But overtraining, the mental aspect of that, can actually create physiologic problems in the body, and it's measurable. Some of the byproducts of chemicals in the body, some of the heart rates that happen with these kids, it gets elevated heart rates during their rest periods. I mean, there is a true physiologic thing of overtraining, and I don't I wanted to make sure to bring that point up because he made a great point about that. That is an injury just like a lot of these others.
Well, I know that you talk about a lot of these kids presenting with injuries that they shouldn't really have at their age, that they're injuries like their grandparents have. For instance, if you're a hockey player, you have to have a certain stance, and that seems to lend itself toward hip problems. And so you have professional hockey players who at 25 are getting hip replacements. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that has been brought out in several studies of looking at those ice hockeys, the split position whenever they go down to try to hit the low low shots. That split and that overuse and that can develop changes in the top of the femur, where the ball fits into the socket. It can make physiologic changes in there that later on do develop those older problems at an earlier age.
And yes. Do you see that kind of thing if a kid does nothing but play baseball or basketball or football, and particularly a particular position in those sports?
Well, certainly high-risk positions of the body are going to put that person there, and whether it's in a specific sport or not just really comes down to more of the position that they're in rather than necessarily. Now, if that sport requires them to do that, just like we talked about with the ice hockey, if you're always going into the split to get the low shot, then, yeah, that's going to set you up for potentially where there would be a problem for that later on. But that's what I read that study that you were referring to as well about the ice hockey and how there's an increase in that. And if you look at, elbows, Dr. Andrews down at the ASMI in Alabama, who does a lot of these elbow and shoulder repairs, as he did, I'm not sure exact numbers, but he said, so I did 10 repairs on anybody under 25 from 1980 to 2000, and I've done 200 from 2000 to 2014. So it's just an explosion of these that are actually going into needing surgical intervention. We are seeing more of that change.
Let me share a couple of emails that have come in while we've been talking. If you'll take that off the screen, I can read the emails. Thank you very much. Mila in Huntersville says, my daughter just turned 10 and pitches in a tournament league. During some tournament weekends, she'll pitch up to 2 or 3 entire games on Saturday and Sunday. The duration and intensity concerns me, given her young age and the permanent damage it may have on her shoulder and other areas of her body long term. What are your guests' opinions regarding this issue? Should I be concerned, and what can we do to minimize potential damage?
Well, I think softball is obviously is easier on the arm compared to baseball. And I know these girls pitched multiple games in a year or in a day, but there's still a muscle fatigue factor. And we preach to teams have four, for softball, 3-4 pitchers, and in baseball have 9 or 10 pitchers on your team so that you can go out and when you do compete with your best of your ability, give it your best, and you'll feel rested and you'll actually compete at a higher level. and then let somebody else play. I mean, share the ball. And so I think that for all the sports and softball and baseball, which are really highly specialized in that mechanics, they need to give a break.
And I'm assuming that that is a softball. We're making that assumption from there. She may be a baseball pitcher as well, right. but from a softball perspective, that's one thing that I hear a lot of times is, you know, softball is a natural motion, and therefore you can't injure your arm. Well, even if I did a natural motion of bending my finger but did it 5,000 times, I could still end up having a problem with that. So,
did you want to chime in on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I think one of the keys is, you know, listen to your child. Talk to him about it. Ask him, you know, are you enjoying pitching this much time? We kind of forget that aspect of it sometimes. We just think about the injury risk. Right. But there's the mental side as well. Are you enjoying doing this? Is this what you want to do? How do you feel? How's your fatigue level? Any pain? You know, engage your child and listen to what they're telling you, because a lot of times the kids know what's going on with their body and can articulate it.
John emails, I coach varsity cross country and varsity baseball. While I don't necessarily have a problem with high schoolers specializing in sports, I do have a problem when this new fad of year-round training gets in the way of a high school athlete diversifying their sports prowess. I went to school with tons of D1 athletes in South Georgia who all played other sports in other seasons. I teach and coach now, and it's like pulling teeth to get a basketball player to run cross country or play baseball because they have been specialized since they were young. And that can lead to burnout, something you touched on a couple of times, and a lot of potential could go to waste there because they just don't want to play it anymore.
That's right. It's a big risk. And going back to something David said, we sometimes forget there are life lessons to be learned by playing sports. Whether you play them at the uber competitive level or you're just playing them recreationally, there are life lessons.
Cliff Boyd is president of the Matthews Athletic and Recreation Association. David Darwin's a pitching instructor and owner of Core Athletics in Concord. And Dr. Kevin Burrows is director of sports medicine and injury care at Carolina's Healthcare System. Thank you all for the hour.